Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
It's a great honor and pleasure and privilege to be here with these wonderful devotees. All of you wonderful devotees. Listening to the remembrances of what life was like when Srila Prabhupada was here, what our service was like when he was here. Of course, I thought of so many aspects, spanning a number of years. But when Rukmini was speaking about her softly uttering the verse and thinking that Srila Prabhupada might have heard her, I thought of one incident in which Srila Prabhupada seemed to have read my mind, although later one devotee mentioned he might have actually heard you because he has such acute perception that he can hear something that no ordinary person could hear. This comes in in 1977, Srila Prabhupada's last year with us. And he was quite ill and pretty much confined to his quarters in Juhu on the top floor of the tower facing the ocean. And pretty much no one was allowed up there, which was very hard for the devotees, especially in India, because we had been used to seeing Srila Prabhupada every day and interacting with him quite freely compared to other places. And Srila Prabhupada was ill, and the rule was, no one should come up. And if you did have to come up, you should be very quiet. So it doesn't disturb Srila Prabhupada. Yes, Dinanath Prabhu is motioning that people should come forward because there are more people waiting to come in. So at the time, I was the temple president in Juhu, and Mahārāja Krishna Goswami was Srila Prabhupada's personal secretary. And I went upstairs to see, and Mahārāja Krishna Goswami had a desk in the front room, and you would see him at the desk when you entered. And he gave me a deposit to make in the bank. And thinking that I was trying to make wise use of my time, but actually being puffed up and rebellious, I said, I'm the temple president. I have so many responsibilities. can't you get someone else to make the deposit? So just then, Srila Prabhupada rang his bell. And there was no way. We were speaking in hushed tones. And Tamalkrishna Goswami's desk was in the front room. Then there was another room, which was like the library room or a reception room. And then there was Prabhupada's quarters where he actually stayed. And the doors to Prabhupada's quarters were closed. And, you know, we made sure that all the doors were closed and that we were speaking in very hushed tones. So we didn't think anything when he rang the bell except, wow, Srila Prabhupada's calling us. We get to be with Srila Prabhupada. So we raced in and offered our obeisances and were waiting to share some nectarine moment with Srila Prabhupada. And he looked at me and said, if the spiritual master asks you to go to the bank, and you say that you are too busy, where is the surrender? So I thought about that. I thought about that because, to my mind, Tamalkrishna Goswami, he was just a god brother. I mean, he was certainly an older god brother, and I had great respect and appreciation for him. But I thought, you know, he's my god brother, and, you know, we're working together, and, you know, he had the idea I should go to the bank. I had another idea. And then what Prabhupada said, if the spiritual master asks you to go to the bank and you refuse, where is the surrender? And from that I got the idea that the spiritual master can speak to us through others, not just in his own localized physical form. And in the humble mood of service, we can see our God brothers or God sisters as spiritual masters or representatives of the spiritual master and treat them, take their instructions as we would a direct instruction from the spiritual master. There was another occasion. Srila Prabhupada had his immediate staff, who were pretty much always with him, but then others would come and be given a chance to do some service. Srila Prabhupada was there for several months, just in his quarters. So one of the devotees who was given a chance to do a little service was Navyogendra Swami. And Navyogendra Swami, every afternoon Srila Prabhupada would take some green coconut water. He would have just a little dab water. Maybe some fruit, although he wasn't digesting much then. And Navyogendra Swami was late. And Srila Prabhupada became very angry. And Navyogendra Swami said, Srila Prabhupada, sometimes you become so angry at us, we don't know what to think. We don't know what to feel. Srila Prabhupada said, you should feel jubilant. You should think that there are so many people loitering on the street with no one to care for them. with no one to correct them if they do something wrong. So you should feel jubilant, and you should think how fortunate you are that you have your master to look after you and correct you. Then another time, this just at that time, there had been elections in India, and Indira Gandhi, who had been the prime minister and declared a state of emergency and became like a dictator, I think she thought that people liked her more than they actually did. Because during the emergency, everyone was flattering her and bowing to her and serving her. So she thought, oh, okay. So she removed the emergency and declared elections. And in the elections, she was defeated. And the Janata Party came into power. And there was a great mood of jubilation. And the new prime minister was Morarji Desai. And Morarji Desai had a home in Bombay. And on his way to Delhi, he was stopping at his home in Bombay. And I had a friend who was a member of parliament and, had a relationship with Morarji Desai. And he asked, if Prabhupada would like to meet him. And Prabhupada had said, yes, he can meet him, but he should come to Juhu to meet me. He said, not that I'm proud that, I want him to come to me, I won't go to him. But for my meeting with him to be effective, he has to have the right mood. So if he comes to me, it will show that he has the proper mood of respect. So the member of parliament said, all right, I'll ask him. So late that night, the night before the meeting was supposed to take place, the member of parliament phoned me. He said that Morarji Desai's schedule would not allow him to come to Juhu, but, Prabhupada could come to Bombay. So I didn't know what to do. And so I thought, well, I have to ask Srila Prabhupada, but it's so late. It was like midnight. For us, it was the middle of the night. But I thought, this is really important, and I'll just go and check and see if he's awake. So I went upstairs, and everyone was asleep. There's no secretaries or servants to pass by. And so I walked around to Srila Prabhupada's far door, and I looked inside, and he was sitting at his translation table. If any of you have been to Srila Prabhupada's quarters in Juhu, that it was actually, each floor had 8 units, and so we made the space that would ordinarily have been 3 rooms, that was one large room for Srila Prabhupada. And then on the side he had another room as a bedroom. So one side was his translating table. The middle section was his, say, darshan desk. And then the right side was his prasad table. And when he moved into his quarters, and these quarters, like unprecedented in ISKCON. Like marble floors, chandeliers hanging from the ceilings, and carved wood ceiling, and all custom-made furniture. It's like really beautiful. And when Srila Prabhupada moved in, he said, "Oh, this is just like my room at Radha Damodar. I translate in one corner, I meet people in another corner, and I take prasad in another corner." So it was a humorous remark, but it actually showed Srila Prabhupada's transcendental vision. And as far as he was concerned, personally, it was the same. As long as he could do his service, it was adequate. Nothing more, nothing less. So I went upstairs, and he was at the far table, and the light was on, one little light where he was translating. So I still wasn't sure. I offered obeisances. He saw me and he motioned to come. So I came forward and I said, I hope I'm not disturbing you. And he said, "No, I can't sleep anyway." And he said, "I was always praying to Krishna for this. I can't eat, I can't sleep, and there's really no question of sex or defense. I guess I must be liberated." So I explained the situation. He said he wouldn't go, but if the Prime Minister is willing, Tamal Krishna Goswami and I can go in his place. Hence, you know, went back. It was probably 1 a.m, and I phoned the Member of Parliament, and Tamal Krishna Goswami and I went. But it was a very, we had very few opportunities to be with him there, but each opportunity had great significance and was very relishable. And although Srila Prabhupada was our spiritual master and the world acharya, he reciprocated with us in such a way that he would consult us. He was independent, but at the same time, he didn't consider himself to be independent of us. So when it came to his body, his illness, his body, he consulted us. He didn't just make an independent decision. So the question became what to do. Should he stay in Bombay? He wanted to be in Bombay for the opening of the temple, but it wasn't clear exactly when the temple would be ready. And otherwise, he would prefer to be in Vrindavan. And different devotees were expressing different opinions. And Prabhupada emphasized that no matter what, don't take me to the hospital. I don't want to die in the hospital. And in the end, it was decided that he would go to Vrindavan. So I had arranged a life member who lived nearby to come to drive Srila Prabhupada in his Mercedes Benz. And he was scheduled to come. It was all arranged, and it was pretty early in the morning, and I didn't want to phone him and tell him not to come. But something in my heart told me he's not the one who should be driving Srila Prabhupada. Yeah, he lives nearby and he has a lot of money and he has a nice car, but I don't think he should be the one to be driving Srila Prabhupada. So I phoned a pretty good friend named Dr. M.D. Desai, who's now initiated as Srinathji Das. And I told him, this is the situation. Srila Prabhupada has to leave for the train station in 2 hours. Can you make it? So he came with his old... It was a big car. It was a very big car. An old Plymouth. And so, you know, he took Srila Prabhupada down in his palanquin, and, you know, devotees were crying because they knew that this was probably the last time they would see him. And we had put sheets in the back seat, and Prabhupada was lying down, and I think Upendra was in the back with him. Maybe Brahmananda. I don't even know how we fit in that car. And Tamal Krishna Goswami and I were in the front with Srinathji Das. And we were so early. It looked as if we would have 2 or 2.5, maybe even 3 hours before the train was to leave. And Srinathji Das's house, you know, the beautiful apartment, was not far from the train station. So I was sort of suggesting, talking with Tamal Krishna Goswami, that maybe we should go to Srinathji Das's apartment and wait till it's closer to the time when the train is scheduled to depart. And from the back seat, Srila Prabhupada, who was so weak he could hardly speak, he says, "What is that?" So we explained our reasoning, and Srila Prabhupada said, "No, go straight to the train station." So we went straight to the train station, you know, 2.5 hours before the departure. And we looked at the timetable. And just that day, they had changed the schedule. And the train was leaving in 12 minutes. So it was frantic. Somehow... someone ran, got a wheelchair from Srila Prabhupada, you know, everyone was scrambling, taking the bags and literally running full speed ahead down the platform. And with 3 minutes to spare, because it's not so easy, you know, you have to see what compartment you're in, there's a passenger list, you have to make sure that, you know, it's not such an easy thing to catch a train in India. And what to speak of the throngs of people that are crowding the platform. I mean, I'd say racing full steam ahead, it means racing full steam ahead and navigating through the other people on the platform who might have got run over by Brahmananda and the wheelchair. So that's what I meant by full steam ahead. And so anyway, with maybe 3 minutes to spare, Prabhupada got his compartment. He was sitting down with the devotees. And Srinathji Das was also running. And he got there with maybe 90 seconds left. He wasn't scheduled to travel, but I don't know if I suggested it or he, or maybe Prabhupada even called for him to see him.
Yeah, I think that's it. It was so hot. She knew she was perspiring, and he had stopped at the Limpka stand. I mean, and he had just ordered a cold Limpka, and Prabhupada called for him. And he rushed into the compartment, and he paid his obeisances at Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet, put his head at Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet. And no one was really allowed near his feet then. And within his heart, he surrendered to Prabhupada. His whole life, he had been associating with Mayavadis, big Mayavadis, you know, famous Mayavadis. And anyway, ultimately, he accepted Srila Prabhupada as his guru, offered his obeisances. It wasn't just offering his obeisances, it was surrendering his life to Srila Prabhupada. And then the train whistle blew. It was like that, you know, the train starts going slowly. It was sort of hard for him to pull himself away from Srila Prabhupada, but it's like he had to. And as the train was slowly pulling out, to jump off. Some of you may have had that experience. It's not easy the first time. Or the second, or the third. Maybe you get used to it after a while, but it's you just don't know exactly what's going to happen. But he jumped down, and from then on, he's dedicated his life to Srila Prabhupada's service. So I guess it's another instruction of how Srila Prabhupada's mercy continues, and one's service to Srila Prabhupada continues even in Srila Prabhupada's physical absence. So I just heard sounded like the conch shell. Maybe it's a sign that the time is up. But I'm so grateful to Srila Prabhupada for bringing us together, for giving us this beautiful life, and to all of you for joining him in his mission, and especially to my dear God brothers and God sisters who really sustain me in Srila Prabhupada's physical absence. Hare Krishna.